Okay, you guys ready? The goal of marriage is oneness, right? That's one of the main purposes of marriage, mutual completion, oneness. And a communication is an essential part of that. So here are some principles. We're going to share some principles and then try to get a little practical with you guys too in the midst of it. So staying connected, what does it mean to you guys to be connected? So you can, that'd be a good question to write down and maybe think about before talking with your mentor couples. What does it mean to be connected? So a great question you could, if that's too like broad, you could ask, what has my fiance done that has helped me feel connected to them? Like when, what are times where I feel connected or close to them? Staying connected is a discipline in marriage. Your goal is not to share information with each other, right? That's not oneness. You guys do that with your roommates now, right? You're not one with them. You and a lot of you guys probably feel connected to your roommates, so maybe the analogy breaks down there. But you guys are one, and so the goal for you guys is not be like, hey, what did you do today? You know, how was your day? Oh, good. You know, I went to work, and share information with each other. It's regular times that you guys are staying connected. And this can be subtle, but it's very important. So the difference might be, oh, how did you feel today? Oh, I felt crummy, you went blah, blah, blah. What were you excited about today? And for each person, it's a little different about how they feel connected. You know, you guys might be familiar with the five love languages. That's a great tool. I'd encourage you, even if you guys have time, to read that together and be like, oh, this is kind of how I feel loved or how I feel connected in our relationship. You know, you see in Scripture tons of verses about that have to do with communication, loving one another. Honoring one another. And marriage, you know, that's like your prime relationship. You guys are living at your oneness. It's of the utmost importance. So communicating love to one another, how do you do that? How do you receive love from your fiancé? What are ways that you communicate love to them? And it's good, I think it's important to know both for each of you guys, how you communicate it and how you receive it, because a lot of times those are different. I communicate love to Megan through acts of service. That's like my default. I'm going to start her car when it's cold out before she goes wherever. That's, for me, that's how I naturally want to love her. She receives it differently than that. That's not like her top love language. I could probably serve her and do 20 different things in a day, but if I sit down and write a note, spend 5 minutes writing a nice note to her, that speaks way more volumes. So, you know, one of her love languages is words of affirmation, words of encouragement. And for us, that's been a thing where we've had to learn. We've learned that about each other. Oh, okay, I communicate this way. It takes work for me. I wanna communicate love in the way that she receives it, in the way that speaks the loudest to her. So learning those things about each other can be great. So for you guys to spend some time thinking about, if you want to do the love languages you can, or just more broadly, how do I communicate love? How do I receive love? And even talk about it. You can even quiz your fiance. Hey, how do you think I receive love? What do you think it is? I think it's great for you guys to talk about that. So staying connected, you know, the discipline of truly being connected to each other and not just being roommates or buddies, and then the discipline of communicating love to one another. Those are huge. Here's a few practicals for you guys. Maybe you guys are already putting these into practice. But getting date nights, getting regular time where you guys are connecting together. And I know a lot of you guys are probably planning weddings, and date nights can become, here's my list of 25 things we need to talk about. You know, maybe it's 15 of those are from my mom and we need to hit them or she'll be mad. Whatever it is, a lot of times when you guys are engaged, that can consume your date nights. Try to protect your date nights, especially now. You may think, okay, we'll get regular time when we're married. Now is a great time because engagement is just, it's a challenging time. It can be wonderful, but it's also challenging. It's kind of like an already but not yet. You've had this commitment to each other, but you're not yet married. You're not yet one. You're not living together. And so now's the time to really invest and even to lay that foundation, get those habits going of having a consistent date night together. We had a couple of friends who had a date night, and then they had to have a conflict night because of during the season they just had a lot of conflict, and so they're like, our date nights are just becoming fight nights, so let's have a separate time where we can get together and like talk through some of our conflict and try to work through it. And then another time where we're like just trying, even if there was like, you know, some unresolved stuff, we're just trying to be refreshed and stay connected. Again, these are just tools for you guys to help you guys in your engagement period. And then just another practical is to just communicate regularly what you appreciate about each other. It never gets old to hear it. You know, we're almost 8 years into marriage, and I feel like I could hear that every day, what Megan appreciates about me. Maybe I'm just narcissistic. It helps. It's encouraging. It helps you guys stay connected, for you guys to communicate regularly what you appreciate about each other. Okay, so that's kind of the first part of that, is staying connected. Part two is dealing with expectations. This is so huge in relationships. Not just marital ones, but especially in your marriage. Expectations. So thoughts that start with, if they really loved me, they would do X, Y, Z without me having to tell them. That's an expectation. And we have to be careful, because there's expectations that are communicated and there's expectations that are not communicated. So you have to be very careful about the not communicated expectations. Man, I was really hoping that Brett would empty the dishwasher, and he didn't, so now I'm upset. We had that one in our marriage. I had this uncommunicated expectation to Megan. Well, if you really love me, you know, acts of service. I show love by emptying the dishwasher. So if she doesn't, then what does that mean? Does he love me? Does he respect me? I never even talked to her about that. Hey, it'd be great. It would really help me feel loved if blah, blah, blah. That's a communicated expectation, and that's different. There's, you know, and that, at least it's on the table there, and you can talk about whether that's reasonable expectation or not. But the uncommunicated ones, they're not good. And it's kind of setting yourselves up for failure, because your spouse can never win. If they don't know expectations you have, they are not a mind reader. As great as they are, they cannot read your mind. And as much as you like to think they should be able to read your mind, that is not fair for them. So just know that those are, and you guys might even not know what they are until you get married. Maybe you have a kind of a sense now, but especially when you're married and living life together, you know, for a lot of you guys will be like, whoa, this is my first time. You know, we're living in an apartment together or a house or whatever. Things are different, and so you may not even realize it until you guys are practically living life together. Like, oh, the toilet paper is over and not under. You know, stuff like that. You're like, whoa, you put it under, which under never makes sense, by the way. So never try that. Always over, anyways. That kind of stuff, it may come up, and you may be like, whoa. But for you guys, just to be thinking about now, just individually, I encourage you guys to get some time as individuals, and maybe to touch base as a couple. Do I have unspoken expectations of my spouse? You guys may see them now in your relationship. He didn't call me. She didn't, you know, whatever, give me a hug when I saw her. You know, you may have expectations of, and a lot of times you can tell by if you're feeling hurt, upset, sad, angry, you know, emotions, they will trigger an emotion. You're like, I'm not really sure why. And if you kind of take a step back, get a bigger perspective of it, it's like, wow, they didn't really sin against me there. They didn't really wrong me. A lot of times those can be indicators that there's unspoken expectation there. Does that make sense? And again, spoken expectations are totally fine and healthy. You could say, hey, I'd really appreciate it if Friday night you turned your phone off so we could just be together and talk and not be interrupted by work calls or whatever. That's totally legitimate. And your spouse can then say, you know, I don't think I can commit to that. That might be a little high expectation, you know. But for you to have it on the table is much better than if I say, oh, okay, Megan's answering her phone. I'm starting to get bitter. You know, I really feel like if she wanted to be with me, she would turn it off. You guys see the difference there? So again, this is an area of communication. It's always better to communicate. So I'd encourage you guys to think through that some. just so that when you come to the mentor a couple times, you guys have some, all right, here's what we're seeing now, or help us navigate this, or is this a okay expectation to have? And this comes up in a lot of different areas. Sometimes intimacy, there can be expectations on intimacy that you don't really talk about until you're married, and that can create conflict. So just be aware that these can come out in a lot of different areas. Okay, so that's part two, expectations. Do you guys have any questions about that part? Jeremy, just email me if you do. Or call. Okay, part three is how to fight well. This will be the third part of, this is the last part of the three parts. Proverbs 12:18 is a great verse to have at your disposal. Reckless words pierce like a sword, but the tongue of the wise brings healing. How you guys speak to each other is very important. Your words, you guys have like the greatest like megaphone in your spouse's ear than anyone else in their life, because you're so close, your relationship is so intimate and vulnerable. So even more than their family or friends, you have that. And this can be for good or for bad. And just know that you know, the Bible warns strongly about words. James 3 is a great entire chapter about the tongue and the dangers of our speech. And it's easy to think, oh, words will never hurt somebody, or, you know, it's okay to say things. They don't have lasting wounds. And that's not the reality. There's great potential for hurting, great potential for healing from your speech. So, on a practical level, just learning how to fight well is good. That's one of the things that Megan and I struggled with a lot, is fighting well. So we would have conflict, it would come up, and then we did not really have the tools to figure out how to engage in battle in a healthy way. And so we had to learn kind of the hard way how to fight well. So we, you know, they can get very practical. Like, we didn't even encourage having fighting parameters. Like, there's some things that we decided we're not going to do this, and we had to learn the hard way. You know, if we were fighting and I would just leave, I'm out of here, that would be really, really hard for Megan. And so there was a parameter. We put on a boundary, even, of when we fight, I will not leave. And we will not, neither of us will leave. It would be hard for both of us. Some things that were just like, we will never do these things. We will never threaten divorce. I would encourage you guys to have similar things. You know, these are things, just tools to help you guys, but things that I would encourage you guys to commit to together. And even think what would be, you know, maybe you guys haven't had intense conflict yet, and that's great, that can be really good. But what are some things that I feel like, these might be really challenging for me if we were fighting, if we had conflict and this happened? For us, part of it was how and when we resolve. We were taking that verse, you know, the verse about not letting the sun go down in your anger, we were taking that very literally. And so we would have fights at night, and then we'd be fighting. Okay, it's 11 p.m., midnight, we're still not resolving. Well, we can't go to bed yet because we're both still angry. Things are getting worse because now we're tired, and so our self-control is going down even more. And so we're just like heaping on, you know, hurt on each other, and there's no like resolution. And so we realized, okay, I don't think that that's actually to be taken literally, but there's more like of a proximity to it. We want to resolve quickly, but it was destructive to our relationship to continue to fight. And so there would be times where like, okay, we need to both just call it quits and affirm each other. I love you. I want to resolve this. I love you too. I want to resolve this too. Let's go to bed and, you know, talk in the morning. And this is, you know, for a lot of people, this is a challenging area because of a lot of times your family background and dysfunction can play into how you fight, how you resolve. You know, like one extreme is like, you never fight. My family never talked about conflict. I don't talk about conflict. There's no fighting. You know, I'm coming at you and I'm gonna win this thing. You know, I will win this war. We all have different kind of styles of how we deal with conflict. And you know, biblically, conflict is a very serious thing. And for you guys to really see this as this is serious, and there's no sweeping things under the rug, that is not a reality. You know, there's a verse that talks about it's to a man's glory to overlook an offense. And that's great. To overlook an offense is great, to offer forgiveness. But you have to be in a spot where you're actually overlooking it and not saying, oh, that's okay, that really wasn't fine. And then, you know, a month later it comes out in another fight, or, you know, bitterness, or, you know, maybe even quicker than that, you sense bitterness or resentment. Conflict affects us, and for you guys to be aggressive to resolve it, and even to seek help in it is critical for your guys' relationships. So just remember those words. I was told, I think Shaw coached me early on, to be like, dude, just come with a list of all the things you were sorry for. Just do that and then see how that goes. Don't come with like your guns a-blazing. Don't come with, hey, I'm sorry for these things, but also it hurt me when you did these things. Just come with your lists and be the first one to say, I'm sorry. And that really changed my perspective on things, and it changed how we did conflict. And I did not do that perfectly, but that helped me, because I'm like, okay, I need to come and apologize to this woman. So remember, I am sorry, I was wrong, will you forgive me? Just keep those close at hand. Even if you're not feeling it, obviously you want to be sincere. If you're not sorry, just think, I'm sorry. But to get to the point where you do feel like I'm sincere in my apology, it takes, you know, the expression, it takes two to tango. It takes two people to have a conflict. If one person is like really angry, or, you know, disgruntled or upset, the other person can choose in that moment to love them, to offer them grace, extend grace to them. The conflict happens when both people are involved in some level. And so just know that pretty much any time you have a conflict, you are responsible to some degree. You may think, hey, your spouse is going crazy, and you're like, what is wrong with, who are you? What is wrong with you? Know that there you have your own weakness and flesh and brokenness that is factoring in. So hopefully that helps you just have a posture of humility and a desire to resolve, and even to want to be the first person to come and apologize. James 1 is a great couple verses. 19 and 20 says, "Dear brothers, take note of this. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. For man's anger does not bring about the righteous life that God desires." Quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. Man, I wish that characterized me during conflicts, because that is so good. Are we quick to listen? Are you quick to listen? A lot of times conflict is like one person will talk and the other person will want to cut them off and kind of like power up and then kind of going back and forth. So be slow to speak, slow to become angry. There's a proverb that talks about how it's better a patient man than a warrior, better one who controls his temper than one who takes a city. Just a great perspective on a picture of patience. Patience is good. Okay, and then practically, debrief your fights. This is a tool that is like, it's painful to do, and it's hard to do, and sometimes it's just like, I don't know, trudging through, you know, the mud, but it's so worth it. It's like hard work, but it's good. Debriefing your fight. What I mean by that is, basically, when you guys have gotten to a place of resolution, you guys have gotten a chance to resolve, and you feel like you're at peace with each other, to then, at a time of peace, go back and talk about what happened there in that conflict. You guys will see this helps you not have the same fight over and over again. Maybe some of you guys have experienced that already. We kind of have a similar conflict about some issue, and we have it again and again. Or it's different things each time, but it's kind of the same pattern of conflict. This will help you guys grow through that, to debrief it. What happened there? I got upset when this happened, when we started talking about this. This is what was really going on for me, having a chance to kind of wrestle with the heart issues for each person. What could I have done differently that would have been make it easier for you? And this is a great context for you guys to not focus on the other person and how they wronged you, but on you and how you can help the other person. Megan and I have just gotten a ton of insight into each other, to each other's lives and issues through debriefing our conflict. Because we may say, we may be fighting on this level, the surface level, but really what's going on is deeper heart stuff that neither of us knows is happening. You said this, and I was really upset. But what I'm really hearing was, you don't have what it takes. It's hitting this like deep lie. I'm not worthy of respect. And you saying, oh, I don't want to go to Burger King tonight, really said, I don't respect you. And, you know, and we don't know that. We just have this conflict, but it has this emotion of our issues and lies and whatever else is going on, or, you know, or deep psychological issues that are coming out in this area. So for you guys to debrief, sit down and say, what happened here? How can I help through this? What did I say that was really hurtful to you? And then even to communicate your guys' hearts for each other. Well, this is really how I feel about you. I'm sorry you heard this. That's not the case. Or, you know what? I meant that at the time, and that was just mean-spirited of me. I'm sorry. This is how I feel about you. So then next time it comes up, you guys might have a little bit more insight into what's really going on a heart level. Another practical is identify rules for fighting. We kind of talk about this with parameters. Just think about what are some things that you want to commit to never doing that would, you know, cause deep pain for your spouse. Sometimes you'll find these things by walking into them, right? You don't want to come into marriage with like, here's our 72 rules for fighting. We think we're going to help us fight. It's like a couple of maybe major things. And then as you guys have conflict in your marriage, you may realize, okay, this is, this is one of those things. Can we talk about it and maybe commit to not doing that? So like we found this out. I was really mean to my wife and she started crying and then I mocked her crying. And then for her, that like pushed the button. Obviously, yeah, that's like, don't do that, you idiot. But for her, that was like, you know, that was like, that's a no-go thing now. And then another one is like, she like laughed at me one time when we were fighting. That was kind of like a mockery laughing or something. And for me, I was just like, oh no. So we talk about these things and we have these things now. I'm just committed to it. I'm not going to do this. No matter how angry or upset we get, I'm not going to. You know, I'm not going to mock her. She's not going to, you know, laugh at me in a certain way. So just having things like that, just practicals that can help you guys fight well. Okay, and then one more practical for you guys is reflective listening. And this will actually be a homework for you guys too. This is such a critical tool. There's courses that are offered on listening, on reflective listening. You know, James being quick to listen. There's actually skills that are involved in listening. So, for example, we've had couples that, like the couple that we had, talk through an entire conflict for one of our things. They were not hearing. Literally not hearing what the other person was saying. So I may say to Brett, I really want to play basketball after this, and I'm disappointed that you're going to go play soccer, which actually is true. Just kidding. He may hear, oh, you don't think I'm good at basketball, and so reflective listening is a way for someone to communicate back to you what they thought they heard you said, and then you can like say, yeah, that's right, or no, that's not right. So I may say to Brett, all right, so Brett and I could be reflective listening. I'll say, Brett, you know, I really, you know, wanted to play basketball with you after this time. And Brett could then say, okay, so this is a reflective listening tool. He basically repeats back to me. So what I hear you saying is you were really hoping we could play basketball after this time, right? It's like, yeah, duh, I just said that. But you guys would be surprised how much stuff gets lost in the hearing of it, but also in the speaking of it. I could say that to Brett, but what I really mean is something else. And when Brett shares it back to me, I'm like, no, that's not what I mean, Brett. What I really mean is, I really feel like I'd like to get more time with you than we do. And that could be on my end of the communicator error, like I didn't communicate really what I mean. Sometimes it's on the listener. Oh, what I heard you say was, you know, blah, 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 and then they didn't quite catch it. So reflective listening is literally, this is kind of at its fundamental level, is literally you guys sitting down, one person sharing a thought and a feeling, or a desire and a feeling, and then the other person literally parroting that back to them. So what you're saying is, Steve, blah, blah, blah. And that's it. That's reflective listening. And this is a tool. It may seem like very, like, you know, I don't know, elementary, I guess. But it's so good for you guys to be able to communicate well. One, it helps the communicator feel affirmed. Oh, like, oh yeah, you heard me. But two, it can, there's a lot of stuff, you know, especially men and women, we a lot of times will communicate in different ways and get stuck on how we're communicating, and someone will miss it. So this will help clarify that. So for you guys' homework, this is what I'd like you guys to do. Each of you guys individually write down three things you would like to see change in your relationship, or three things you would like to see be a little different, and then how you would feel if each one of those things were the case. This is actually a good exercise because it's kind of vulnerable, and you know, that's, don't like make them up, have them be real things.
What was the second part? Yeah.
It's basically how you would feel if that was different. So like I could say, Brett, I really feel like I wish we would play basketball more. And it would make me feel ecstatic, or it would make me feel appreciated if we played basketball more. Does that make sense? Oh yeah, sorry. So you each do that individually. So Libby, you'll write down three things that you would like differently in your relationship with Jordan.
Okay, that's part of it.
Okay, yeah. Sorry. And then how you would feel if each of those things happened. And then Jordan will do the same. And then you guys will sit down and share it. And one of you will go first and share the first one. So Brett and I are doing this. I would say, Brett, I would love to play more basketball. It'd really make me feel important if you play basketball when I texted you about it. And then Brett will repeat back to me, okay, what I hear you saying is you would like to play more basketball and you would feel loved. So it's, you know, and some people like have mocked this exercise because it's so basic. But it's a tool that is so good, and for you guys to kind of practice it now. Because most of the time it's way more complicated than just a sentence and a feeling, right? Sometimes it's like, oh, I felt hurt when blah, 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 and then we were at your mom's house and, you know, she was talking about this, and then so that made me upset, but then you didn't follow me when I walked away, and so then I was, you know, it could be like so much stuff going on. So for someone to be able to even, and this is another part of it too, I forgot to mention, is to summarize and just, okay, what you're saying is you were hurt when my mom said this, and then you were hurt more when I didn't follow you down to the basement to talk to you about what happened. And I'd be like, no, what really happened was I was hurt by this, and that, you know, you guys kind of get the picture. But so each of you guys to sit down and then share that with each other. Does that make sense? And the goal of this is just to get you guys, and a lot of you guys may excel at this already. Some of you guys, communication may be a struggle. Actually, I think the assessment will help kind of, you know, show where you guys are at and how you guys communicate. But this is just to help you guys kind of lay a groundwork of communicating and doing it well. Conflict is good for your marriage. Conflict builds intimacy. In an ideal world, we'd never have conflict, right? Because we'd not be broken and we'd all be Jesus to one another. But the reality is that we are broken, and conflict is something that builds intimacy. Marriages that do not have any conflict, I would be very hesitant to say, wow, that's a really picture of health. And maybe it is. You know, older couples, they, you know, maybe grow in their intimacy and security and walking with Jesus and whatever. But conflict is a healthy part of your marriage, and resolving it well is, I think, an even healthier part, will help you guys be closer and be more intimate in your marriage. So don't shy away from it, or don't fear it. For me, I fear conflict. I do not like it at all. But it has been a big part of us feeling more teamed up and more connected, understanding one another, showing each other grace more is through conflict. Okay, I have a second part of homework for you guys. Sorry. It is this. It is to debrief a conflict. So you guys have the communication, the reflective listening exercise, And then this is to debrief a conflict. So basically sit down at some point, and if you guys haven't had a conflict for a while, then yay. But try to remember one that you guys did have. Maybe you guys had just one yesterday or on your way here even. Just sit down at some point and debrief what happened there. Just pick one. It doesn't have to be a major thing. Just, you know, where you guys had some conflict, sit down and debrief it. What was going on there for you? What was going on for me? Okay. If more conflict comes up because of this, that can be a really good thing, because that can show you maybe this wasn't resolved, or maybe I'm still feeling upset about this, or we don't even see eye to eye on what went down there, and so we got to dig deeper into it. But just another exercise for you guys to get in the habit of debriefing a conflict. And then just have that in your toolbox for your mentor couples, to meet with them and just to share that conflict. I think that'll help give you guys some fodder for kind of diving into communicating your different communicating styles. So, sound good? We might talk more about communication as we go, because I feel like this is just a fire hose and kind of broad strokes, and the nitty gritty might be like, oh, how does this, you know, apply, or how does this work out, or you may have specific questions about communicating, but hopefully that all makes sense. So, mission statement, and then the two communication exercises. Really, it's good to have those for your mentor couple, but you know, if you're like meeting with them this week, it might be too soon. But if you guys can have it done by 2 weeks from now, I think that'd be great. That way we can talk about some of that if we want to. But especially the best spot will be for your mentor couples to kind of dive into some of this stuff.